Oh, how I faint when I of you do write, knowing a better spirit doth use your name, and in the praise thereof spends all his might, to make me tongue-tied, speaking of your fame. But since your worth, wide as the ocean is, the humble as the proudest sail doth bear, my saucy bark, inferior far to his, on your broad main doth wilfully appear. Your shallowest help will hold me up afloat, whilst he upon your soundless deep doth ride. Or, being racked, I am a worthless boat, he of tall building and of goodly pride. Then if he thrive, and I be cast away, the worst was this, my love was my decay. Or I shall live, your epitaph to make, or you survive, when I in earth am rotten. From hence your memory death cannot take, although in me each part will be forgotten. Your name from hence immortal life shall have, though I, once gone, to all the world must die. The earth can yield me but a common grave, when you entombed in men's eyes shall lie. Your monument shall be my gentle verse, which eyes not yet created shall o'erread, and tongues to be your being shall rehearse, when all the breathers of this world are dead. You still shall live, such virtue hath my pen, where breath most breathes, even in the mouths of men. I grant thou wert not married to my muse, and therefore mayest without a taint o'erlook the dedicated words which writers use of their fair subject, blessing every book. Thou art as fair in knowledge as in hue, finding thy worth a limit past my praise, and therefore art enforced to seek anew some fresher stamp of the time-bettering days. And do so, love. Yet when they have devised what strained touches rhetoric can lend, thou, truly fair, wert truly sympathized in true plain words by thy true-telling friend. And their gross painting might be better used where cheeks need blood. In thee it is abused. I never saw that you did painting need, and therefore to your fair no painting set. I found, or thought I found, you did exceed the barren tender of a poet's debt. And therefore have I slept in your report, that you yourself, being extant, well might show how far a modern quill doth come too short, speaking of worth, what worth in you doth grow. This silence for my sin you did impute, which shall be most my glory, being dumb. For I impair not beauty, being mute, when others would give life and bring a tomb. There lives more life in one of your fair eyes than both your poets can in praise devise. Who is it that says most? Which can say more than this rich praise? That you alone are you, in whose confine immured is the store which should example where your equal grew. lean penury within that pen doth dwell, that to his subject lends not some small glory. But he that writes of you, if he can tell that you are you, so dignifies his story. Let him but copy what in you is writ, not making worse what nature made so clear, and such a counterpart shall fame his wit, making his style admired everywhere. You to your beauteous blessings add a curse, being fond on praise, which makes your praises worse. My tongue-tied muse in manners holds her still, while comments of your praise, richly compiled, reserve your character with golden quill, and precious phrase by all the muses filed. I think good thoughts, whilst other write good words, and like unlettered clerk still cry Amen to every hymn that able spirit affords in polished form of well-refined pen. Hearing you praised, I say, 'tis so, 'tis true, and to the most of praise add something more. But that is in my thought, whose love to you, though words come hindmost, holds his rank before. Then others for the breath of words respect, me for my dumb thoughts, speaking in effect. Was it the proud fool sail of his great verse, bound for the prize of all too precious you, that did my ripe thoughts in my brain inhearse, making their tomb the womb wherein they grew? Was it his spirit by spirits taught to write above a mortal pitch that struck me dead? No, neither he nor his compeers by night, giving him aid, my verse astonished. He, nor that affable familiar ghost, which nightly gulls him with intelligence, as victors of my silence cannot boast. I was not sick of any fear from thence. But when your countenance filled up his line, then lacked I matter, that enfeebled mine. Farewell, thou art too dear for my possessing, and like enough thou know'st thy estimate, the charter of thy worth gives thee releasing, my bonds in thee are all determinate. For how do I hold thee but by thy granting, and for that riches where is my deserving? The cause of this fair gift in me is wanting, and so my patent back again is swerving. Thyself thou gavest, thy own worth then not knowing, or me, to whom thou gavest it, else mistaking. So thy great gift upon misprision growing, comes home again, on better judgment making. Thus have I had thee as a dream doth flatter, in sleep a king, but waking no such matter. When thou shalt be disposed to set me light, and place my merit in the eye of scorn, upon thy side against myself I'll fight, and prove thee virtuous, though thou art forsworn. With mine own weakness being best acquainted, upon thy part I can set down a story of faults concealed, wherein I am attainted, that thou, in losing me, shall win much glory. and I by this will be a gainer too. For bending all my loving thoughts on thee, the injuries that to myself I do, doing thee vantage, double vantage me. Such is my love. To thee I so belong, that for thy right myself will bear all wrong. Say that thou didst forsake me for some fault, and I will comment upon that offence. Speak of my lameness, and I straight will halt, against thy reasons making no defence. Thou canst not, love, disgrace me half so ill, to set a form upon desired change, as I'll myself disgrace, knowing thy will. I will acquaintance strangle and look strange, be absent from thy walks, and in my tongue thy sweet beloved name no more shall dwell, lest I, too much profane, should do it wrong, and haply of our old acquaintance tell. For thee, against myself I'll vow debate, for I must ne'er love him whom thou dost hate. Then hate me when thou wilt, if ever, now. Now, while the world is bent my deeds to cross, join with the spite of fortune, make me bow, and do not drop in for an after loss. Ah, do not, when my heart hath scaped this sorrow, come in the rearward of a conquered woe. Give not a windy night, a rainy morrow, to linger out a purposed overthrow. If thou wilt leave me, do not leave me last, when other petty griefs have done their spite, but in the onset come, so shall I taste at first the very worst of fortune's might. And other strains of woe, which now seem woe, compared with loss of thee, will not seem so. Some glory in their birth, some in their skill, some in their wealth, some in their body's force, some in their garments, though new-fangled ill, some in their hawks and hounds, some in their horse. And every humour hath his adjunct pleasure, wherein it finds a joy above the rest. But these particulars are not my measure. All these I better in one general best. Thy love is better than high birth to me, richer than wealth, prouder than garments' cost, of more delight than hawks or horses be. And having thee, of all men's pride I boast, wretched in this alone, that thou mayst take all this away, and me most wretched make. But do thy worst to steal thyself away, for term of life thou art assured mine, and life no longer than thy love will stay, for it depends upon that love of thine. Then need I not to fear the worst of wrongs, when in the least of them my life hath end. I see a better state to me belongs than that which on thy humour doth depend. Thou canst not vex me with inconstant mind, since that my life on thy revolt doth lie. O, what a happy title do I find! Happy to have thy love, happy to die. But what so blessed fair that fears no blot? Thou mayest be false, and yet I know it not. so shall I live, supposing thou art true, like a deceived husband. So love's face may still seem love to me, though altered new. Thy looks with me, thy heart in other place. For there can live no hatred in thine eye. Therefore, in that I cannot know thy change. In many's looks, the false heart's history is writ in moods and frowns and wrinkles strange. But heaven in thy creation did decree that in thy face sweet love should ever dwell. Whate'er thy thoughts or thy heart's workings be, thy looks should nothing thence but sweetness tell. How like Eve's apple doth thy beauty grow, if thy sweet virtue answer not thy show. They that have power to hurt, and will do none, that do not do the thing they most do show, who moving others are themselves as stone, unmoved, cold, and to temptation slow. They rightly do inherit heaven's graces, and husband nature's riches from expense. They are the lords and owners of their faces, others but stewards of their excellence. The summer's flower is to the summer sweet, though to itself it only live and die. But if that flower with base infection meet, the basest weed outbraves his dignity. For sweetest things turn sourest by their deeds. Lilies that fester smell far worse than weeds. How sweet and lovely dost thou make the shame, which like a canker in the fragrant rose doth spot the beauty of thy budding name. Oh, in what sweets dost thou thy sins enclose! That tongue that tells the story of thy days, making lascivious comments on thy sport, cannot dispraise, but in a kind of praise, naming thy name, blesses an ill report. Oh, what a mansion have those vices got, which for their habitation chose out thee, where beauty's veil doth cover every blot, and all things turns to fair that eyes can see. Take heed, dear heart, of this large privilege. The hardest knife ill-used doth lose his edge. Some say thy fault is youth, some wantonness. Some say thy grace is youth and gentle sport. Both grace and faults are loved of more and less. Thou makest faults graces that to thee resort. As on the finger of a throned queen, the basest jewel will be well esteemed, so are those errors that in thee are seen, to truths translated, and for true things deemed. How many lambs might the stern wolf betray, if, like a lamb, he could his looks translate? How many gazers mightst thou lead away, if thou wouldst use the strength of all thy state? But do not so. I love thee in such sort, as thou being mine, mine is thy good report. How like a winter hath my absence been from thee, the pleasure of the fleeting year. What freezings have I felt, what dark days seen, what old December's bareness everywhere. And yet this time removed was summer's time, the teeming autumn, big with rich increase, bearing the wanton burden of the prime, like widowed wombs after their lord's decease. Yet this abundant issue seemed to me but hope of orphans and unfathered fruit. For summer and his pleasures wait on thee, and thou away, the very birds are mute. Or if they sing, 'tis with so dull a cheer that leaves look pale, dreading the winter's near. From you have I been absent in the spring, when proud-pied April, dressed in all his trim, hath put a spread of youth in everything, that heavy Saturn laughed and leapt with him. Yet nor the lays of birds, nor the sweet smell of different flowers, in odour and in hue, could make me any summer's story tell, or from their proud lap pluck them where they grew. Nor did I wonder at the lily's white, nor praise the deep vermilion in the rose. They were but sweet, but figures of delight, drawn after you, you pattern of all those. Yet seemed it winter still, and you away, as with your shadow, I with these did play. The forward violet thus did I chide. Sweet thief, whence didst thou steal thy sweet that smells, if not from my love's breath? The purple pride, which on thy soft cheek for complexion dwells, in my love's veins thou hast too grossly dyed. The lily I condemned for thy hand, and buds of marjoram had stolen thy hair. The roses fearfully on thorns did stand, one blushing shame, another white despair. A third, nor red nor white, had stolen of both, and to his robbery had annexed thy breath. But for his theft, in pride of all his growth, a vengeful canker ate him up to death. More flowers I noted, yet I none could see but sweet, or colour it had stolen from thee.